Parents enraged over books in local school libraries.
You have lost sight of your responsibilities to educate our children. Parents are learning, watching, and taking action.
The book ban rage that is sweeping across the country.
Parents showed up and spoke out against what they call vulgar and inappropriate books that are on district school library shelves.
You all are going to hear what our children are hearing in books.
Hundreds packed a school board meeting with emotions running high.
Look at how you act, and your children are watching.
They had police here, extra security, and even metal detectors at the doors.
People yelling and name calling, and then police escorting people out of the meeting.
Public schools have vivid pornography in it, and these cops won't do anything about it.
What exactly do you think our kids are learning from this book?
The only books that my son can read are about slavery and lynching, things that I find disgusting.
Do you guys think this is appropriate for kids in school?
The books were called pornographic, and parents blame board members for keeping them on the shelves.
Jesus is going to get you one day when it comes to judgment day. All of you.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Courageous Conversations about our schools. Today I'm going to be talking with four people about books, a topic that's everywhere in the news these days. The ones that students should be able to read, the ones that should be banned, and who should be able to make these decisions. According to the education journal EdWeek, in 2021-22, the number of books banned in school libraries increased dramatically. That year, 138 school districts in 32 states banned more than 2,500 books. Those bans affected close to 4 million students. 41% of the banned books were about LGBTQ characters. Titles that contained protagonists or important secondary characters of color were a close second, accounting for 40% of all book bans, or 659 unique banned titles, according to EdWeek. Now, if you've listened to other episodes of this podcast, you know that we invite people to participate who have different perspectives on controversial issues facing our schools. You also know that what happens here is not often what we see or hear on social media. Our goal is to see what happens when we turn down the volume and have civil conversations. To help make that happen, my guests have all agreed to follow a few simple conversation agreements. The first one is that we'll limit our comments to the time allowed, and that will generally be about 3 minutes. The second conversation agreement is that we're not going to be interrupting, and everyone's agreed to be respectful in their comments. And the third one is to simply be curious rather than confrontational. And the idea is to try to listen and understand others' perspectives rather than try to convince them why you're right and they're wrong. At the end, I will ask all of them what they take away from this conversation, what they learned, and whether this type of communication about a controversial topic has value to them. And listeners out there, you can decide for yourselves, and please feel free to share your thoughts in the comment sections of our website and on your favorite podcasting platforms. Okay, let's meet our guests. First, I'm going to have everyone meet Nancy Vera. You're a teacher, right?
Yes, I'm officially a teacher, but right now I'm on full-time release as president of the Corpus Christi American Federation of Teachers, the Teachers Union here in South Texas.
Tell us about what you do when you're not working.
I'm taking care of my cats.
Ah.
I have several cats, and because we have a problem with stray cats in Corpus Christi. And so I feel sorry when they come up to me, and they look skinny and all worn. And so I nurse them back to health, and then they stay around. So currently I have 9 cats, and that's all I can handle. Yeah, that's all I can handle right now.
All right, Nancy, thanks so much for joining us today. Next, we have Summer Crow. Summer, tell us about you.
Yes, my name's Summer Crow. I'm in Texas as well. So I'm in the Keller ISD district, and that's outside of the Fort Worth-Dallas Metroplex. And I have three kids. They range from elementary school all the way up to high school. So we have elementary, middle, and high school all represented. I substitute teach in my spare time. I actually really enjoy that. I do it more for the interaction with the students than I do the money. I just really enjoy being in the school environment. I come from a long line of educators. So I do that as well as a lot of sports watching. So I have a lot of kids that participate in sports. So I'm usually at the ball fields watching baseball games. I do try to get in some Pure Barre classes for myself as well, though.
Well, yes. Thanks so much. I'm glad you're joining the conversation today. Next, we're going to go to Abigail Harris, who's has the unique distinction of being the one student we have on the call, or a current student. I'm sure we all have been students or are students of life in general. But Abigail, tell us about you.
I'm actually from Georgia, the Forsyth County School District. So we've been a little notorious when it comes to the book banning process. I'm also a student activist. I'm the Forsyth County Outreach Lead for the Georgia Youth Justice Coalition, which is a group of high school and college age students that originally rallied against several different causes, one of them being the book bans. And we've gone so far as to speak to state legislatures and release messaging guides on a state level, talking about combating book bans and things of that nature. I'm also a student intern for the Forsyth County Board of Education's Teaching and Learning Department. So I do get to see how the process works from behind the scenes a little bit too, which is very interesting. And in my free time, when I'm not doing activist work or at my internship, I enjoy hiking.
And last we have Alvin Liu. Alvin, did I pronounce your name correctly?
Yes.
Alvin, you're a parent like some of the rest of us, but tell us about where you live and what you do and your connection to education.
Sure. I'm in Indiana, and I was originally from California and moved my family out of California in April 2020 to Indiana. And Courage is a Habit is an organization that I'm with that primarily helps parents understand kind of what's going on in the schools, help them understand kind of what their children are facing, and kind of give them tools and resources so that they know how to defend their children. Because a lot of things that are happening in schools, parents are understandably very concerned about. And so we try to develop tools and resources for them to, because there's a lot that with parents when they work, most parents, some moms stay home. Sometimes there's two income households. Sometimes there's, you know, a single mom, single dad, and they don't have the time to listen to, you know, 20 hours of podcasts or read 10 hours of white paper. So we try to distill things down to them that they can understand. And then they can then find out for themselves what's going on in their schools and take action themselves if they feel like things are not appropriate or appropriate in schools.
And when you're not spare time,
this takes up a lot of time. So I the times I do have, oddly, I actually love reading. I try to read things that are not part of this world because I read too much of it. And so I try to read things that are trying to, like right now I'm reading this fascinating book called This Will Never Work. And it's a story of the original Netflix founder and how they started and how difficult it was and how everybody thought that was a dumb idea. Sending DVDs through mail, and it's a great inspirational read about how to start a business that's now a multi-billion-dollar business. So
thanks for that, and thanks for introducing yourselves. We're gonna jump right into the topic of book banning and which book should be banned, if any, and who should decide. So the first question is: are there some books and materials that no students should have access to, regardless of their age? Summer, you want to go first?
I can take that, sure. So first off, I think that it's important that we break this question into two different categories. In my opinion, students, because there are students that are 18 years and over, should have the freedom to read and access whatever materials they would like, so long as it's not breaking any laws. I think where they access those materials, though, is a key point. You know, it's one of the beauties of our country is having our public library system. And a lot of different bookstores. So there are other options to access materials outside of just their public school libraries. Within the public school system specifically, though, where patrons are primarily under the age of 18 years of age, I do believe there must be careful consideration of materials and books. I believe books and materials should be provided that are engaging and challenging, for the oldest, most advanced readers and mature patrons. However, and this is, I know, where it gets tricky, I don't think books should cross community standards for what's considered morally inappropriate for the youngest patrons of that particular library. So I do think it's possible to provide great, challenging literary works to the oldest patrons without exposing the youngest patrons to content that is age inappropriate. We live in a highly sexualized world these days. However, there are high school students that are going to battle to shield their minds from sexually explicit content. They know their hormones are raging, but they also know they don't yet have a healthy sexual outlet, for lack of a better phrase, and they don't want to do anything to further awaken that desire. They are careful about what they search, view, listen to, where they go, who they hang out with, and date. But in many of these books, especially those in the fantasy and nonfiction romance genres, the reader has no idea in advance if the book is going to have explicit sex. It's not fair to them to be reading a book they got from their school, to be invested in the characters and the storyline, and then come upon a fictional, explicitly detailed sex scene that gives them all the feels. If we are going to provide this content, at a minimum, I believe our teens should be forewarned. Furthermore, I believe parents should be able to say, my child does not have permission to access certain content such as explicit sex, explicit rape or sexual assault scenes, for younger kids, profanity, glorification of self-harm, suicide, or drug usage. These are all topics that parents should be able to monitor and discuss and know that their kids have now had exposure to before their kid just is reading it without having that parental oversight.
Summer, thanks so much for that. Abigail, you want to take a shot at it?
So one thing that I think is really important in this kind of discussion is there is no black and white when we're talking about materials like these. It's really difficult to say no students should have access to X material and all students should have access to Y materials. When we're looking at a K through 12 education system, we're looking at a variety of age ranges and we're looking at a variety of maturity levels even within those age ranges. So saying that this type of material is appropriate for elementary school students could vary wildly when you have a 12-year-old that has a different maturity level than a 7-year-old. So that's something we have to be very conscious of as advocates for our community. So one of the main things is, I think putting an absolute stop or an absolute ban on certain books can be the dangerous part. Because when we say no students should have access to this materials for X, Y, and Z reasons, we're discrediting the concerns of students who may be able to handle those materials, or that may be the reality of they are mature or they feel that this is an appropriate material. And that's much different than this book is a gray area and we should have students or parents pick where their student is able to handle those materials. So I don't think that there's an absolutely hard line, no students should have absolutely no access to this material, because saying that in itself is the dangerous thing. But then coming back and saying we should be able to have a conversation about what books and materials are appropriate, that's more of a gray area, because obviously you don't want a 6-year-old to pick up a book that has a graphic sex scene in it. But at the same time, for some high schoolers, while that's not necessarily what's deemed morally appropriate or goes along the moral standards of their community, it may be something that that high schooler sees as appropriate for them based on their life experience, which isn't something parents and a lot of advocates want to hear, and that's understandable. But there's a difference between an 18-year-old picking up that book than a 7-year-old is what I'm trying to say. And when we have these materials and we're taking them out of the classrooms, then we reach a point where it's at, is it your comfort level we're working with, or is it what's appropriate? Because those can be two different things. Certain parents need to monitor their students more closely. They feel that's appropriate. But in other ways, monitoring an entire classroom and taking certain books out of that classroom can erase experiences and can erase different narratives that are accurate and that are historically accurate, that fit into our communities and that we don't see on our bookshelves. So then we as students have something that may be appropriate for our age range, but we're not seeing it because that narrative isn't deemed as appropriate, or it's not deemed as something that we as students need to have access to And that's where the danger comes in for us, that we get access to different narratives and storylines taken away from us that represent members of our community.
So Alvin, we're going to come to you. And are there some books and materials that no students in schools should have access to, regardless of their age?
First of all, I think book banning is definitely a term that's already been misused, because I have not ever met a parent who wanted some of these books out of the schools, these really vulgar, obscene books out of the schools, to say they don't want the books to exist at all. I've not had one, and we work with parents all across the country. I have not heard a single parent ever say they want the book banned. What they're talking about is appropriateness. And we do that with everything. We don't really have gray areas when it comes to movie and music. They have an NC-17, they have a rated R, they have a certain flag for music. Certainly, if you want to buy it for your child, you can do that. But my, you know, 7-year-old, 8-year-old cannot walk up to the theater and say, my maturity level is that I can go watch a Predator, or I can go watch whatever. Hey, you got, even if I took her, if I walk up to her and say, hey, she's 7, but I believe she has a maturity level of 15-year-old, you can let her in. They will say, we can't sell you the ticket, right? So we have these measures across for everything. So in all forms. So the books, saying that the books, you know, we can have a gray area because it could be this or that. It doesn't match for how we try to protect the minds of young people. So yes, absolutely, there should be measures in place. And a lot of the books that I've seen where parents are kind of up against it, they're obviously very vulgar. We're not just talking about ideas. I think the difference between we shouldn't have books out of the school if the ideas make people uncomfortable, but it's the vulgarity. So you have things like genderqueer, this book is gay, or it's perfectly normal. Those are pornography, because it's actually here's my test for everybody listening and everybody here. If I take a book, okay, and I work in the office, and I took that book and I took a page out of the book, and I walked up to my female coworker and I put it on her desk and I said, this is for you, and I signed my name. If I took some of these books that the parents wanted out of there, by lunchtime, I'd be out of a job. They wouldn't even write me up. They just send me the HR and say, you're out of here, right? Because no female coworker would be good with me putting that book on their desk. So here's my acid test, and here's what I'll say about the should their books be in or out of kids. If you as an adult male take that book and give it to your female coworker, and if you can comfortably do that at your workplace, then I'm good with it. But if you don't think you can do it without getting fired, it shouldn't be in schools in front of minors. That's a kind of a pretty easy acid test, I would say, when it comes to that. If it's not, and a lot of the books that we're talking about that parents want to be gone, I can't read it in legislative open sessions. They won't let me read it. I can't show it on TV. I can't read it on the radio, because it actually violates FCC laws. So if I can't read it in a legislative open session, if I can't read it on the radio, I can't show it on, if I'm getting interviewed on TV, why is it okay for minors?
Great. So Nancy, let's let you answer the question and have you jump in and share your thoughts about whether there are some books that should be banned regardless of the age of the student.
Well, I don't know if that should be the criterion for banning books. I think that I don't believe in banning books. I think that each parent has the right to choose what book the child should read or their children should read. And I know that we have in our public schools criteria that we use as educators to determine whether a book is age appropriate or not. And we certainly aren't going to give explicit books to children in our public schools. That's not the point. The point is exposing them, as somebody said, I think Summer said, to ideas, and that she isn't opposed to that. And the thing about it is, where do you draw the line? I think here in Corpus Christi in the Independent School District, I know we have a system where we warn the students and the parents that the book may have explicit content or not, whatever that may be. And so the parents have to sign a form saying that it's okay for their child to read that book. But the other concern is with novels. I know one novel, Bless Mi Ultima by Rodolfo Anaya, which is the first Latino novel to be made into a movie. is one of the banned books. And my question is why? There's nothing sexually implicit in there, but it has a lot to do with culture and a different type of culture that perhaps many with which many are not familiar. So my question is, where do we draw the line? I think you're talking right now, I know that there is an organization that has a bounty on teachers' heads, educators' heads, of $500 if the teacher is teaching an explicit book or a book that they don't like. That's all, it's all relative to who you are and what your family is and where you come from. I think we shouldn't ban books just because we don't agree with them personally. Should there be warnings? Perhaps. Perhaps there should be warnings like in movies, and this is R-rated or G-12 or whatever the ratings are. But to just ban books just for the sake of saying, my child is not going to read that, and I don't think anybody's child should read that, who are you to say what children our children should be reading? I think that is nothing more than censorship. And to ban books totally means that you're banning ideas. You're banning other people's ideas. You're banning ideas that perhaps we can ask the students to be critical thinkers about. Do we agree with this type of activity, or do we disagree? And we can't have those discussions anymore. What we're doing is we're not going to have critical thinkers if we start banning every book with which we disagree. Everyone disagrees with every single book I know.
So I think when we talk about book banning, I agree with Nancy. I don't think there should be book banning. I think that's a very dangerous, slippery slope. I really do. And I don't know any parent that wants that, because there are certain things that you want to read to based on your family, where they're coming from, to your kids. But we are talking about a public institution here. We're not talking about a private school. We're not talking about after school program. We're talking about a government public school. And there are quite literally hundreds of millions of books that you can teach all kinds of things that's been written since the dawn of time. The only time I've ever, in my work, the only time I've seen parents push back on books are books that are vulgar. So I will answer Nancy's question to go, where do we draw the line? That is a very, very good question. And I think that's a question that everybody should ask. Fortunately, the Supreme Court already decided where the line is. And there's two cases in the Supreme Court. One is the Board of Education versus PICO, and the other one is the United States versus the American Library Association. And in both times, they talk about the vulgarity. Vulgar books may be removed from school forthwith, removed right away, if the books in question are pervasively vulgar. That's the Board of Education versus PICO. That's how a lot of these really vulgar graphic books, not ideas, vulgar books. And in the United States versus American Library Association, there's a line in there that says, there are substantial government interests at stake here. The interest in protecting young library users from material inappropriate for minors is legitimate and even compelling. And all members of Congress appear to agree. And in that case, the United States versus the American Library Association, the word vulgar showed up 19 times, something like 19 times in their case. And one of them is, why must vulgarity be perverse to be offensive? Vulgarity might be concentrated in a single poem or a single chapter or a single page, yet still to be inappropriate. Or a school board might reasonably conclude that even random vulgarity is inappropriate for teenage school students.
Yeah, just a quick point of clarification for you, Alvin. When people talk about banning books, I don't think they're talking about burning them and making them unavailable to anyone. They're talking about banning books from school libraries. And that is a ban, isn't it?
See, I disagree with that. I think that term is used to, it's a dishonest term to get parents off of the trail of being able to protect their kids. I think that puts people on the defensive, because what we're not talking about book banning, we're talking about appropriateness. This is what the Supreme Court decided on, right?
If you say we're not going to allow this book in this library, we're going to take it out, physically take it out. No student has access to that book. Isn't that, in a limited sense, a book ban? You're banning that book in that library?
We don't say when a movie is rated R, we're banning a movie. It's just appropriateness. It's just saying that these books should not be in front of minors, just like pornography, right? We don't allow Pornhub to go through schools. We have a filter for that. We're not banning Pornhub.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Abigail, you have a question.
From the sense of a student activist, we like to be kind of concise about the terms we use. And from my understanding as a student who's used the term book banning before, I understand where you're coming from. The term book banning, it sounds like we're trying to be divisive. And it sounds like if you say, I want this book banned, then you want it absolutely wiped off the face of the earth, demolished. And no one wants that. Obviously, there are very few people that would say this specific idea or this specific experience should absolutely be demolished. That's wild. And it's something we don't see a whole lot on any side. But for the sake of this conversation and for the sake of what the term book banning means in a general sense, I think we can all agree to say that book banning in this sense, for this conversation, doesn't mean wiping a book off the face of the earth, that it means revoking access for users of a school library from having access to that material.
Raise your hand if you want to jump in with a question. Summer, please.
The term that I believe the ALA uses, the librarians use, that sort of thing within any library actually is deselection. So a book has been deselected from that particular entity rather than banned, because that gives just there's deselection procedures for each school and their policies. Each school board has their policies and procedures for how a book can be deselected, when it should be deselected. I think that, you know, especially with regards to this podcast, which is to lower the tone, I think deselection is a fair term that everybody can understand what we're talking about. When you use the term banning, there is, I would agree, there is a, it's something that just makes everybody's blood boil because nobody wants to see books banned. And especially when we're talking about that we have other public entities, free entities, our public libraries that provide these same books. It's not like the child even has to go out and pay for it. It's still free for them. It's just at a different location. And I'll add, at the public libraries, you've got to go in with your parent if you're under 18 to get your library card. So a public library does have a certain parental oversight in it as well.
I have a question, and I appreciate that distinction you're making between deselecting, because the banning has implications that, you know, technically we maybe say we're banning it from this library, but it has these other implications that are kind of cause people to
negative
wins,
yeah.
And say that's helpful for me. I guess I have a question about deselecting books, and I'm thinking, you know, one could have the position we should not deselect any books from school libraries, right? And that would be a pretty extreme case. But I just wonder if anyone on the call here today would agree that no material should be deselected, because I'm thinking about, you know, a book that promotes violence, or a book that tells people how to make bombs, or that are universally or widely viewed as being obscene. We wouldn't, and I guess I'm coming to Nancy and Abigail, we would want to deselect those books, wouldn't we, from school libraries? So it's not that we would be opposed to banning or deselecting any books. It's back to your point, Nancy, is where do we draw the line?
Well, it's all relative, Ken.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is, in Texas, we have people who would love to show our students all about guns. In fact, we do have books in our libraries about guns and rifles and semi-automatic weapons. Well, do I want those in the library? No. But at the same time, people who want those books are going to say, wait a minute, our child has a right to know. And then you have, of course, in some schools, the ROTC, where they actually hold guns and all of that. But I'm not trying to stray from the topic. It's just that, once again, it all depends on where you live, with the community in which you live, and those community standards that somebody was talking about earlier. It's different everywhere we go.
Okay. Summer, you wanted to reply?
Yeah. So, Nancy, I agree with you there. You're exactly right. community standards plays into this to such a high degree. That's where, and that again, Supreme Court rulings, we have our EF legal policies that state this. It is up to the school boards to define what is educationally appropriate for their local entity. I do think this is very much a local decision. I think it's something that it's why local elections matter so much. It's why there's a heightened awareness amongst communities now to get out and vote for your local elections. But I think that we need to step back and give our school boards the authority that they've been given through that vote to define what is and isn't appropriate for those various age groupings.
Summer, we're going to come to that really tough question in just a minute. So I want you to hold that thought and come back to it, because as Nancy and others have said, it's, you know, where do we draw the line? And that's really what our next question is going to be about, is who decides and where do we draw the line? But I just have a quick question for you, and then I know Abigail wants to jump in. The examples that you gave in your opening response, and then again here, many of them were related to what you thought was inappropriate, had to do with things of a sexual nature, right? But you didn't, to my recollection, in anything you said, refer to what Nancy was talking about as books that say or have gratuitous violence in them, or books that are about guns and perhaps glorifying violence. Would you also be opposed, and would you support deselection of books that are that have gratuitous violence in them?
So that is where my calling is to pursue making sure that there's an awareness of the sexually explicit content in these books in our schools. In getting involved in this movement, though, there have been voices raised in terms of violence, profanity, those sort of things. I think, again, it's important that we define it for different age groupings. So, you know, for instance, violence, my personal opinion on that is for high school. I think that is okay. Now, you mentioned, you know, a book that teaches you how to build a bomb. You know, I think there should be some restrictions on those kind of things. We don't want to be teaching anybody, honestly, how to build a bomb.
Summer, let's say someone like Nancy comes in as a parent or as an educator.
Yes.
And as she said, I don't like books that talk about, that glorify the use of guns and shooting other people. And she is a parent or an educator. I don't want that. Are you going to respect that and say, okay, I will add that to the books that are deselected at this school?
So I think it's one of those things that needs to be defined by your local school board as to what is and isn't appropriate and at what level for those various touchy subjects, such as violence. I think violence should be, and it is here in our district, one of the line items on our rubric.
I have one quick question for you, Alvin, because you used a really interesting example to make a point you were making, and that was that if you took certain materials that are allowed, the students are allowed to see or study in schools, and you took it out and you handed it, a man handing it to a woman, you'd be fired. Did I get that right?
Right.
That it seems like so hypocritical that in the one hand, you have material that would cause someone to be accused of sexual harassment, maybe fired. Mm-hmm. In another case, it's perfectly acceptable to let students see it. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, I to me, it seems like it's about context. Mm-hmm. If you had an anatomy book, you were teaching high school kids, mm-hmm. and they had pictures of human bodies and mm-hmm. or a sex ed class, and you mm-hmm. were showing them as part of a sex ed class that parents could opt in to have their mm-hmm. kids attended, and mm-hmm. you took those materials and walked outside and put them in front of a person in a coffee shop, mm-hmm. That would be sexual harassment, because it has everything to do with the context, doesn't it?
It does. But at the same time, when you see the sex, the classical biology of, you know, back in the day when they were teaching biology, is obviously a It's like you said, it's context, right? No one's going to look at that book and go, oh, this is just pornography. This is vulgarity. It's obviously written in a way as biology, and you're talking about body parts. And, you know, the drawings are very minimal. But the books that, again, when parents are pushing back on this, and this is now in a podcast, you can't see it, right? But the pictures of these books, the vulgarity, nobody would there's no context there that that's going to be appropriate. This is why I said, if you put it in, again, I could be wrong. I could take a biology book, put it on the desk of my female coworker. She still might turn me in, but I can take that chance. But the books that her parents are wanting to push, I'm 100% sure I'll get fired for it. So you're right. There is some context to it. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's shift to the next question. And it's such a, you know, when we have conversations like this about controversial topics, I think what this one in particular is complicated. It's there's a lot of you've alluded to, as Nancy said, where do you draw the line and who decides? And so we're going to now jump into that complex question, and that is, who should determine what books students should have access to in public schools? What role should parents play? And I think I want to add to that Abigail's question, what role should students play in making those decisions? Alvin, go ahead.
Schools have been around for quite some time, even public schools, right? And the problem that we're seeing today is because of the influx of all these new books that are really just completely crossing the line. Because you think about it, students had voices before, parents had voices, people had, and then there are books in there that challenges ideas, and nobody had any real problems with it. But today, these books that are coming in are obviously very, either very heavily political in nature, or obviously trying to push an ideology or a sexual ideology or a violent ideology. So there hasn't ever really been a huge problem in public schools until very recently. So the question really to me is, why has it been? Why has this been such an enormous push for these books? Whereas before, look, you can have a book that challenges an idea that I don't feel comfortable with. That's fine. And no parents really had a problem with it. So, but back to the question of, this is why the two Supreme Court cases are so important, because the question of who should decide has already been decided.
Great. Summer, do you want to respond to the question?
Add on to what Alvin was just saying. He is exactly correct, and I've read the whole PICO case front to back. And it does make the allowance for books to be deselected if they are pervasively vulgar or educationally inappropriate. The problem that we come into with that particular terminology that's used for these challenge committees is that those terms, all of them, all four of those words, are extremely subjective. What we're really finding needs to be done is that at the local level, again, the school board level, in partnership with the administrators, those terminologies need to be defined. So what is educationally inappropriate? When we say pervasively vulgar, what exactly does that word pervasive mean? I've been in challenge committee meetings with professionals that say pervasive means every single page. No, it doesn't. Mm-hmm.
Is there a definitive answer to the question, though?
No, there's absolutely no. It's extremely subjective. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think, you know, ultimately, I hate to say this, but this might end up back at the Supreme Court to get some clarification around some of this terminology. And if you really get into this case, even the four justices that were in dissent on this case called out all of that. They said, hey, this is a problem. We're using this terminology. It's not going to hold water. So what we're doing in our district is saying, okay, we know we can deselect books based on this, but to lower the tone in our community, let's come up with what these terms mean for our district. So what our district decides they mean is probably going to look vastly different than, let's say, Austin, Texas, or LA, or Las Vegas, you know, for example.
And Summer, I want to tie this back to what you said earlier, because I think I understand what your answer to my question is, which is that school boards, elected school boards,
in partnership with administrators
and school administrators
in partnership with. So Yes, yes. So, and it does say that in the EF legal documentation, it does say, you know, that this should be a partnership, but ultimately the school board, who's the elected officials, are the ones who vote off on the policies that are created by the upper level administration within the district.
Okay. All right. Nancy, let me come to you. How should, who should determine what books are deselected, if we want to use that more neutral, what might be viewed as a more neutral term, the books that the students should have access to schools?
Well, should I say, for example, that a history book that doesn't reflect the Holocaust or slavery in America be banned? Or are we still going to continue teaching the fact and denying the fact that in some cases that the Holocaust never occurred or that slavery never occurred here in the United States? I think it's all relative. I think we have to be very careful when we start talking about deselecting or banning books. As far as the parents are concerned, we're assuming here, we're making a big assumption that all parents are like all of you. They're not. We have parents who are not as educated, parents who are recent immigrants, parents who are uncaring, and we have households that have domestic violence. So how in the world are you going to just allow a group of people, of concerned parents, just to make those decisions for the rest of the group? I think sometimes, as much as I deplore violence and all of that, how are we going to teach students about domestic violence? I remember one time I was in the classroom and I was teaching students about life experiences as related to literature. And a child came up to me after class, this was a senior, and said, I didn't realize that my parent was abusing me. And that's because of something that we read in a book. Was it explicitly violent? No, but at the same time, it was one of those situations where you can't really determine what is appropriate or inappropriate based on your personal life experiences. Yes, I agree that the board should make a decision. Yes, I believe the administrators, but I think the community as a whole, including teachers, should be making those decisions specific for the needs of their children in the classroom. And I think that we as professionals, as teachers who are professionals, we know what our students need. And I wish they would give us the autonomy, along with the parents and talking to the parents and the school board, instead of just administrators, instead of a top-down thing. Let's ask the students what they want to see. Let's ask the students what they're experiencing now, because it may be very different than what we think.
So, Nancy, I'm just going to try this this concept called looping, which is just a word for seeing if I understand what you're saying. And I want to see if it's that different from what Summer was saying, and maybe even what Alvin was saying. Then we're going to come to Abigail. That you think that people do need to come together and have these conversations about what's appropriate to put in schools. And you tell me if I'm right or wrong. But you Summer mentioned school board members and school administrators are the people that should do that. But in your mind, do I have it right that there probably should be some restrictions on some materials that are across the line? But you think that it should involve, that those decisions should include members of the community in addition to elected school board members and students and teachers. Do I have that right?
I think so. I think that there need to be continuous conversations with regard to how our society is evolving or devolving. We don't know. So we need to have those conversations. And if we don't have them, we're going to be making assumptions about what is appropriate and inappropriate. And we don't really know.
I guess what comes to my mind is, in the end, we have all these interesting conversations, and I agree they're great. But in the end, who decides on the list of books that are in our school's library? Who ultimately makes that decision?
Well, you know, in my experience, we have had people who come out from the community who are involved in a certain church group that come up to a school district different from where their grandchildren, or maybe they don't have any children, attend, and they try to dictate what that school board should do or what books should be read. And they don't have any vested interest in the students in public schools. Are we pushing an ideology of some sort that's coming from somewhere else? Or are we looking at the best interest of the children? That's something that I don't know how we can determine that, because there are people who are vocal out there who are kind of go off the deep end and they don't listen. And they still push their ideologies on those of us who are parents and educators in our communities.
Yeah, this is the messiness of living in a democracy, isn't it?
There is.
Abigail, I want to hear your thoughts.
Well, one of the things that I want to say I've heard from all of the three people who have spoken before me is that I think that the voice of parents, of teachers, and of students is incredibly important at every step in the process. I definitely think that school boards have their role to play in determining who can read what and what books should be deselected or banned, whatever term we choose to use. Ultimately, I think that when we're talking about this who should have this ultimate decision-making power, it's not any one group. It's not just the teachers and it's not just the parents. It's a coalition. It's an agreement between several groups. And I know Alvin works with parents who don't understand what's going on in their children's classrooms all the time, because your child comes home and tells you about the craft they made at school. They don't tell you about the 300 books in their library. It's a very different situation for some parents. And those parents need to be pulled in on the conversation. Teachers like Dr. Vera need to be pulled in on the conversation, because they're the ones who have to teach the curriculum, who have to deal with students who are going through tough situations or have different life experience and have to cater to those students as well as their entire classroom. And parents like Summer, who are very involved in their communities, also have to have their voice, because obviously they care about the educational future of their children. And they're trying really hard to meet that middle ground between where the students are and where the teachers are to have that conversation. But it's difficult when you are trying to define standards and do the work of someone who has educational background, to do the work of someone who is an elected politician and you're a parent. And then there's the students who, some of them are like me and they're student activists and they go speak at school board meetings and they're very involved and they understand what's happening. And some, frankly, couldn't care less if we had a library in our schools. It's a spectrum in every single situation. So in that respect, we have to pull together everyone and have conversations like these in order to determine not if books should be absolutely wiped off the face of the earth or if we should have books about making bombs inside an elementary school library, but to split the hairs, the gray area that we've been talking about for this entire episode. You know, should books that share different cultural experiences or that have profanity or that have what some groups construe as vulgarity in them be allowed in XYZ age ranges with XYZ maturity? That's what needs to happen.
I want to throw a question out to all of you. Just a quick question I'm curious about. It's related to what all of you are talking about. Let's just imagine that we said school boards are going to be the ultimate arbiters in this case. Elected school boards, it's a democratically chosen group of people that are representing hopefully the interests of the community and doing what's right. But they decide as a group that they don't want any books in their school libraries that are authored by LGBTQ authors. Or they don't want books about that have to do with racism. If they there actually are school districts that are deselecting, if we want to use that term, books like that. If you support the idea that school boards get to choose, then you have to accept that some school boards are going to do that because they have. Summer, yes, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so that is without a doubt against the ruling of the PICO case. So that should be hands down not allowed by school boards. And any educated school board that is in council with their in-house legal counsel is going to be told they cannot do that. Okay. So what we are talking about doing, though, is your school board members determining, again, going back to those words that are used from the PICO case, educationally inappropriate and pervasively vulgar. It is up to those elected officials to then define, in conjunction with the upper level administration, what does that look like for our district? Then you can take together parents and put those books up against what has now been taken from a subjective to an objective terminology.
But let's say the subjective interpretation is this book about that has some sexual themes, but it's LGBTQ oriented. People think that's vulgar. Mm-hmm. And as you were saying, that there's some right. subjectivity to it. So it's conceivable, yeah. isn't it, that they could say that's our interpretation of that word.
Of vulgarity?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying? So, I mean, they're probably going to get voted out, right? Again, because it's,
well, unless
it's an elected...
they live in a community that also generally believes that it's LGBTQ themed books are vulgar, and that's who gets voted in. Whether it reflects the community or not, it's a possible problem, right? Wouldn't you say?
I don't see that happening where we're at right now as a society, but it is possible. Again, I would say if that's the people, though, that are representative of their local community, then that's their right.
And I just want to go back to what I had read in EdWeek in 2021 and 22, 138 school districts in 32 states banned or deselected more than 2,500 books, and 41% of the banned books were about LGBTQ students. Now, are you thinking that all of those were?
That's it's a very interesting statistic, because I think we would absolutely have to break that statistic down and see what explicit sex scenes were in those books.
But it's your thought is that those could be interpreted as vulgar, and then therefore it's within their legal right to deselect those books.
Exactly. And that's why it's important that you predefine, okay, if a book has this type of content in it, regardless of what community it adheres or it appeals to, so be it LGBTQ, heterosexual, whatever, we're deselecting it because it has explicit sex, not because it's representative of the LGBTQ community. Okay. I can say in our district, we have tons of LGBTQ books, even though we have deselected books based on sexual explicitness that are LGBTQ, we still have a lot remaining that also share the stories of the LGBTQ community. We're not touching those.
Thank you. Really, a lot for that was helpful to me to hear your response to that. I want to go to Nancy and Abigail, and then Alvin, just for final thoughts on this question. And if you could keep your comments to a minute or less, that would be great. And then I'm going to come to our final reflections on what you take away from today before we wind up. But Nancy, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Well, Ken, I'm glad to hear what Summer said, that is just about explicitly sexual, because we as teachers teach, no matter who comes into our classroom, we teach every child. And I know that 7% of the United States, there are people who identify as LGBTQIA+. To deny them the stories about themselves will be to deny their person, who they are. So I'm happy to hear what Summer said. So we're talking now, I understand a little bit better, that it's sexually explicit, a vulgarity of the strongest sense. Because
absolutely.
I think that the thing about it is that's what we fear here, is that we're gonna be denied our culture as Latinos, or our culture as Black Americans, or we're gonna be denied who we are, perhaps as LGBTQIA+ Americans, because there is a group of folks who just hate. And so I was happy to hear what Summer said.
And Summer, I saw you nodding your head at what Nancy was saying, and Alvin as well. You were agreeing with that. And it looks like maybe there's some common ground here. Is that true, Summer?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where I think the media has done us a disservice as a country, honestly, over this issue, because it it's going to get a lot more views if you say that we're doing something that we're not. I can tell you the majority of the books that I have challenged have actually been heterosexual. They've, had just very explicit sex scenes, but that doesn't mean I don't pass over a book if it's LGBTQ sex that is explicit. It's going to get the same view as, you know, in the same challenge as one that is heterosexual.
And Alvin, did you generally agree with what Nancy was saying? Are we finding some common ground?
Sure. Yeah, I don't think anybody wants to get rid of stories where people see themselves in it. That's never been my experience, and any of the parents that want to get the books that they challenge are certainly either violence or vulgarity in the sexual nature.
Yeah, it's just, and that's why I raised this other question, because someone alluded to the fact, well, we're talking about a group of a few of us here on this call, but according to this report from EdWeek, there were 2,500 books banned in this last year, and 41% of them were about LGBTQ characters. And I'm not sure that all of those 2,500 books had sexually explicit scenes. It may have just been about the themes themselves. And it sounds like both of you wouldn't support books that are being deselected simply because they're about LGBTQ people. Yeah, Summer, I see you're muted, but I see you're nodding your head.
Yes, no, that is absolutely correct. Okay. I do not want to see those books go away. I think that it is extremely important that everybody see themselves represented. LGBTQ, like you said, Nancy, people that have been abused, people that have been the victims of sexual assault, all of those things, we can still have those characters in the books without actually having the explicit detail of the scene.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's a really helpful clarification. Abigail.
Yeah. So I actually want to go back to what Summer said at the beginning of her comment. I think you said something along the lines of, and correct me if I'm wrong here, I just couldn't see that happening in the world that we live in with the state of things as they are, something along those lines. Am I right in saying that?
Yes, I believe so. With regards to a theme of LGBTQ specifically being banned by the school board level.
Yes.
Yes.
Well, I'm really glad that we can say that about some parts of America, but I live in Forsyth County and that's not always true. It's one of those things where I hear people speak at my school board and it can be radically different from what's happening on the opposite side of the country, and overall national legislation may cover it all. But when it comes down to it, I see people speaking at my school board meetings that say, we don't want people who are homosexual or queer in stories that our children are going to read. And when it boils down to it, we're talking about books that are so explicitly sexually vulgar, not because they're homosexual, but because they have sex scenes that are explicit and vulgar. And those people, the people that I have to hear sometimes in my community, sometimes who, like Dr. Vera said earlier, don't really have a stake in our community. They're just coming up to say what they think, to put their two cents in. They're not parents, they're not grandparents, they're not educators. Even though they have their right to a voice, they say these things by nature of, we don't feel like these books should be here because if these kids read these books and they're going to be gay. Well, I've read 100 straight books. I'm still not straight. And I will tell you right now that no book in our library is going to convert a child. And there's a difference between those vulgar books and those queer books. And that's the distinction that a lot of school boards are missing sometimes. And I'm glad that we have school boards that have really, really involved parents like Alvin and Summer, who are out here telling us, like, I would be totally fine if my kid was reading a book that had a queer character or that had a character of a different ethnicity or race that was based around their culture. But that's not what we're seeing in some of these school boards. And that's the really dangerous thing, because we're not talking about communities where concerned parents are coming forward to tell us that, hey, there's this really, really vulgar book that if I put it on my female coworker's desk, she would slap me. We're talking about these communities where these boards are banning experiences, lived experiences of students that make them feel isolated and unsafe in their own classrooms because they can't see themselves on their bookshelf.
We're getting close to the end, and I appreciate your time so much in this really fascinating conversation. But I just want to go around to each of you and have each of you take a minute or a minute and a half and respond to this question. What do you take away from today's conversation? And what do you think about the way that we have this conversation and having it with people with different perspectives, and whether you think it might be valuable for people listening in and others who have conversations like this to have it. Again, take about a minute, minute and a half. Nancy, let me start with you.
Well, I'm taking away the fact that we can reach common ground, that if we talk about things and talk through things and we look at specific things, that we'll be able to come to an agreement or, like I said, common ground. And I, for one, am going to bring this back to our community to see how I can continue to try and forge that type of communication with those folks who are adamant about, they don't say deselecting books, they say banning books, but I'm going to start using that term too. So I'm taking that with me also.
Alvin, I'm going to come to you. What are your thoughts? What are your takeaways from today?
I think the format's great. I think it's wonderful. It's wonderful to hear from someone who's a student or just about to be out of, you know, being a student. Obviously, it's wonderful to hear from someone who's, you know, teaching in it. And of course, the parent, you know, that I hear from a lot. So I think the format's wonderful.
Thank you for that. Abigail, what do you take away from today's conversation?
So one of the really nice things that I was able to take away from today is being able to hear the perspectives of parents who have a genuine stake in the conversation and are obviously coming from a place not of, I'm mad that this is in my school or I'm mad that this is happening in my community, but of genuine concern for their children. That's refreshing because being able to have a conversation versus a screaming match is not always a guarantee in my school district.
Great. And Summer, will come to you last. What do you take away from today's conversation?
So one thing that I keep going back to in my mind is Abigail saying that in her school that books are labeled. And that is something that most librarians have been against that I've spoke with. They don't want a child to feel like if they pick up a book that has sexually explicit content on it, that they're being called out for that. And so that's their fear in labeling books. I think, though, as a parent, that that's somewhere where we could get a lot of middle ground.
Oh, thank you so much for that, Summer. Well, Abigail, Nancy, Summer, and Alvin, I want to thank you so much for being part of this conversation today. It's such an important topic, and it's not always being discussed in the way that we discussed it today. So I've personally learned a lot. I have a lot to think about, and I suspect our listeners do as well. For those listening, if you enjoyed this conversation, if you like seeing what happens when we turn down the volume on important conversations like this, you will probably like our other episodes on topics like race and racism on the School Should Play with respect to gender and sexual identity and how and whether teachers should talk with students about current events and controversial topics in the classroom. You will also find interviews I've had recently with award-winning journalists like Amanda Ripley and Monica Guzman, who write about toxic conflict and polarization, the price we all pay for that conflict, and some of the ways we can better deal with our divides and escape that kind of conflict. Those episodes are available at schoolconversations.org and on most podcasting platforms, which is where you will find this episode. My sincere hope is that all of us can find ways to have civil and engaging conversations with people whose views differ from our own. As I see it, that's the only way we can find a clear way out of the culture wars and provide much needed support to our public schools and to help strengthen our democracy. So long, everyone.